Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanihim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Lamed Tet. Today's daf has been sponsored by Katz Judaica on King's Highway and East 7th in Brooklyn, the former Sisu. 375-7272. Please support all our sponsors. And we start on Kuf Lamed Tet on the second line. Tanya, we have a brighter. Rabbi Yosef ben Elisha, Omer Rabbi Yosef ben Elisha said, Im ra'ita dor shetzarot rabot ba'ot alav. If you see a generation that a lot of troubles are coming onto the generation, a lot of problems, tse ubedok medayene Yisrael. Go check the judges of Israel. Shekol puranu cheba le'olam, because all calamities that come to the world, lo ba'a ela bishvil dayane Yisrael, it comes because of corrupt judges in Israel. Shene emar, as the pasuk writes in Micha, Shim'u na zot rashe bet Yaakov. The Navi says, listen, the heads of Yaakov, the Kitzine Beit Yisrael, and the princes of the house of Israel, Hamata'abim Mishpat, that detest justice, the Et Kol Haishara Ya'keshu, and anything that's straight, they twist. Bone Sion Bedamim, the builders of Zion with blood, which means they accept bribery and therefore allow the murderers to go free, and they do not judge the murderer. Virushalayim behavla, and the Jerusalem that's filled with iniquity. Rasheha beshochad yishpotu, its leaders judge with bribery. Vechohaneha, and its priests bimhir yoru, they rule for a fee. Unbieha, and its prophets, Bekesef Yiksomu, they give their divine prophecy for money. Ve'al Hashem Yishanu, but the people rely on God, and the end of the pasuk says, Lemor, and they say, Halo Hashem Bekirbenu, Lo Tavo Alenu Ra'a, nothing is going to happen to us. Meaning, they are very corrupt, but they have a certain sense of faith. And they say, don't worry, God's with us, nothing's going to happen. So the Gemara says, Resha'imen, these people are wicked because they're corrupt. Ela shetalu bitchonam b'mi she'amar v'haya olam. However, they take their faith and they rely on God. That what? That no bad is going to happen to them. Now obviously, this is misplaced faith, because really they are guilty. And this faith over here causes them not to make teshuvah. Instead of fixing their bad deeds, they say, oh, God is with us, nothing is going to happen to. And therefore, such faith is considered sinful. And therefore, they get punished. Lefichach, therefore, mevia kadosh baruch hu alehen gimel puraniyot. God brings onto the people three different types of punishments, keneged gimel averot shbiyadam, corresponding to three sins that they have. Now we said the three sins were that they accept bribery, they give rulings for a fee, and their prophets accept money to give the prophecies. So, and because of those three sins, they're going to get three different punishments. And here it is, Shne'emar lachen biglalchem. The prophet says in Micha again, because of you, Sion sadet charesh. The Sion is going to be like a plowed field. Yerushalayim and Jerusalem, ayin tiyeh, is going to be a heap of ruin. Veharabayit lebamot yar, and the Temple Mount is going to be like a elevated forest. Meaning, three things are going to happen in Jerusalem, keneged the three things that they did wrong. Ve'en HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashreh Shekhinato Ad Yisrael. God does not rest His Shekhinah, His Divine Presence on Israel, Ad Sheyichlu Shoftim V'Shoterim Na'im Yisrael, until the bad judges and officers
are destroyed from Israel. So long as there's corruptness in the court system of Israel, so Shekhinah cannot rest on the people. Shene'emar, as the Pasuk says, this Pasuk is in Yeshaya, Ve'ashiva Yadi Alayich. God says, I will turn against you, the Itzrof Kevor Sigayich, and I will Bitzoref is to purify you like Kevor with soap, Sigayich, your impurities, the Asira Kol Bedilayich, and I will remove all the impurities, literally bedil is tin, that's the impurities in the metal. God says, I'm going to clean you up, and then Ve'ashiba shofetayich kebarishona, and then I'll return to you the judges like they were originally, meaning the proper judges, ve'yuasayich kebatehila, and your advisors like in the beginning. Amar ula, en Yerushalayim niftei ela bistaka. Jerusalem is not going to be redeemed only in the zechut of charity. Shne'emar, Sion b'mishpat tippadeh v'shaveha b'staka. Sion, Jerusalem, is going to be redeemed with justice, and its captives, meaning those that were sent into the exile, v'shaveha, those with help in captivity, v'staka, will be redeemed with Sedaka. Amar Papa. The Papa said, "Ibatle yehire." If the Jewish people would rid themselves of yehire, what is yehire? That she says, arrogance. These are Jewish people that act like the Persians, the way they dress and the way they do their hairstyle, meaning they're very, very arrogant people. So it says, if these people would become batel, would be gone, then batle amgushe, then the amgushe would be nullified. What are they? Those are the enemies of Israel that, of course, hate us and try to take us away from our religion. Those are like the minim and the kofrim that try to take the Jewish nation and bring them against God. So as long as there's arrogance in Am Yisrael, so measure for measure, there are those that are also arrogant that take them away from God. And if the corrupt judges would be nullified, then again the enemies or the Rishaim, those are the Goyim that persecute the Jewish people, so they also will go away. So there's a direct correlation between the troubles of Israel and when we have arrogant people and when we have corrupt judges. If the arrogant people would go away, so then the amgushe, the heretics that cause us trouble to try to sway us away from God, they'd also go away. Dichtiv, like the pasuk says, Va'etzrof kebor sigayich. God says, I will clean with soap sigayich. Here the Gemara is making a derasha in Aramaic. The word sageh means great. So God says, I am going to clean sigayich, meaning those that are great, at least those that think that they're great, meaning the haughty people, God says, I have to clean them away, and only then, what does the end of the pasuk say over there? Then, ve'asira kol bedilayich. Then I will take away all those that are trying to separate you from God. Those are the amgushe. Those are the ones that try to bring the Jewish people away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They are mevdil. Kavz Gemara continues, I batle dayane, if the corrupt judges would be nullified, batle gezir pate, so the Rishaim that persecute us amongst the Goyim, of the Avodah Zarah, they also will be nullified. Dichtiv, Hesir Hashem Mishpatayich, God removed the corrupt judges, Pana Oyebayich, and your enemies turned away. Amar Rabbi Melae Mishum Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, my dichtiv, what does it mean in the pasuk in Yeshaya? Shavar Hashem Mater Resha'im Shevet Moshelim. God broke the staff of the wicked, Shevet Moshelim, the rod of
rulers. What is it referring to? Shabbat Hashem at Rishayim. God broke the stick of Rishayim. Elu haddayanim. This is referring to judges. Shena'asu makal or makel lahazanehem. That they became a stick for their officers. Meaning, the way that she explains, the hazanim are like those servants that bring the people to the courts. They're the ones that issue the summons, and they're the ones that start the process. But they come to the judges and they say, if you don't give us more money, we're not going to summon the people to Beit Din, and then the whole process cannot begin. So therefore, the judges end up becoming an instrument that the shamashim use. So they become the stick of the hazanim, because they're being used in order now to charge, they're being charged a lot of money in order to litigate the case. Again, this is a form of corruption, obviously. That she says, and we read it inside, Shinasu makel hazanehem, leshamashim, they become a stick to their officers, notnim yad, they give them power, they empower them. Ba'avyad lehem lechozik, which means they give them strength. Lomar, lo yesh shaliyah ba'azmin et ploni lebetin. They say, they threaten, we're not going to invite so-and-so or summon so-and-so to betin, im lo tarbe sachar, unless you give us more money. Ba'ahad psagdin lo irdenu. And after you make your judgment, we're not going to enforce it unless you pay us more. So now already the court becomes an instrument that's working for the corrupt system. Shevet Moshelim, a rod, in the hand of the rulers, Elu Tamidei Hachamim, Shebemishpechot HaDayanim. These are referring to the rabbis that are in the family of the judges. Now again, this is a form of corruption that she says, because the rabbis appoint these corrupt judges, and they empower them. Instead of going against them, instead of deposing them, they allow them to continue giving their corrupt rulings. So they're like the stick, they're empowering the judges. And they cover up for them, as she says, and they also answer up for their mistakes. That's a form of corruption. Kamsi Gemaran says, Mor Zutra Amar, Elu Tamidei HaChamim, this is referring to the Tamidei HaChamim as well, Shemelamedim Halachot Sibur Lidayane Bur, that the Tamidei HaChamim that go teach ignoramus judges general laws in judgment. Means they don't teach them thoroughly how to be dayanim. They give them the basic overview of the subjects, and they rely that when a question will come up to them, that they'll come and ask. But of course, they don't come and ask. And therefore, again, the rabbis are responsible for empowering the corrupt judges, because they're teaching unqualified students. Amar bi Elazar ben Milae Mishum Resh Lakish, by Dichtiv. What does it mean in the Pasuk, again in Yeshaya? Ki chapechem negoalu bedam. Your palms are soiled with blood. Ve'etzbeotechem be'avon. And your lips with sin. Siftotechem daberu sheker. Your lips speak lies. Leshonechem avla tehge. And your tongues speak iniquity. What is this pasuk referring to? Gemara says, "Ki chapechem negoalu bedam." Your palms are soiled with blood. Elu adayanim. This is referring to the judges again, because their hands are opened up to accept bribes, and therefore, as she says, they unlawfully take money from one party and give it to another. And the rabbis tell us that when you take money from somebody unlawfully, that's as if you're taking his life. It's like you're taking his soul. And therefore, it's like you killed him. And therefore, their hands are filled with blood. Meaning, because they're taking money from one party and giving it to the other unlawfully. Rashi's Lashon is, and it's worthy to read it inside, he says, Shekapehen Peshutin Nekabel Shohad. Their palms are opened up to receive bribes. Umatin Etadin. and therefore they tilt the judgment. Ve'notlin mamon min ha'be'alim shelo kedin, and they take money unlawfully. Ve'notno le'shechenegdo, and they give it to the other party. Varehu kenotel nishmato, and that is like you're killing him. You're actually taking his soul. Ve'esbeotehem be'avon, and their fingers are in sin. Who is that referring to? Elu sofrei hadayanim. That's referring to the scribes that write up faulty documents and faulty shtarot and contracts, and they present them. So the fingers of sin are the fingers of the scribes that write. Siftotechem daberu sheker, your lips speak lies. Elu orchei hadayanim, that's referring to the lawyers that prompt the litigants on different claims in order they should say, in order to become exonerated, even though it's a bunch of lies. Neshonechem avla tehege, and your tongues are uttering iniquity. Elu ba'ale dinim, these are the litigants themselves that obviously are saying the lies that the lawyers told them to say in order to free themselves. Amar Rabbi Milaei Mishum Rabbi Yitzchak Megadlea. Now, since we're quoting statements of Rabbi Milaei, the Gemara now quotes an unrelated statement, but that was made by Rabbi Milaei, and he says, "Miyom shepiresh Yosef ma'achiv," from the day that Yosef left the brothers, meaning when the brothers sold him, "Lo ta'am ta'am yayin," says from that day he did not drink any wine. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, ul kodkod nezir ehav. Yaakov Abinu, in blessing Yosef, refers to him as nezir. What is a nazir? Nazir is somebody that takes a vow against drinking wine. So they're saying that because of the situation, it was a dire situation where Yosef was away from his father, so he took a personal vow on himself like a nazir, not to indulge and not to drink wine. Even the brothers, after the sale of Yosef, they did not drink wine. It says only after they came down to Egypt, it says, they drank and they become came inebriated with Yosef, implying implying that that was the first time that they drank again. It means until that time, they did not drink. Which means when it says Imo, it's referring to what? Vayishtu. That's the first time they started to drink with Yosef, and they didn't drink before. But what does the first rabbi say? Because the first rabbi says it was only Yosef that didn't drink. He doesn't say the brothers didn't drink. How does he learn this pasu? So the Gemara says, Ve'idach, the other rabbi, Shikrutu de'lo hava, shtiya mi'a hava. Yeah, when it says Imo with him, it means it's going back on the word Vayishkeru, meaning they got drunk with Yosef, but not to mean that they didn't drink. Yeah, they drank before, just they never got drunk, but one day went with Yosef, so already they even got drunk. So you see, we have a machlok, and if the brothers drank wine before they were revealed to Yosef or not. V'amar Rabbi Milaei, Rabbi Milaei tot, b'schar v'ra'acha v'samach b'libo, zacha l'choshen ha'mishpat al libo. This is referring to Aharon's reaction when Moshe was told that he's going to be the leader to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. Moshe was a little hesitant to do the job because he was a little concerned about his older brother Aharon's feelings. After all, Aharon was the prophet that was in Egypt before Moshe, and God promised him, he's going to see you and he's going to be happy for your promotion. So the Gemara says, "Bizchut," that good heart of Aharon that had happiness for his brother, so he was zochet to wear the Hoshen Mishpat, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol on Aharon's heart, where God communicated through Ruach HaKodesh, through the breastplate which was on the good heart of Aharon. You see, the rabbis, the way I explain it is, Aharon was zochet to have the midah of Moshe. Moshe's midah was what? That he was a conduit of Shekhinah.
you were happy for your brother who became the conduit of Shekhinah, Midah Keneged Midah. Your good heart will also be the conduit of Shekhinah. Now that she tells us, Zachal Choshen HaMishpat Shekeneged HaLev Shaya Gadol Mimenu. Now we know Aaron was older than Moshe. Ve'kodem LeMoshe Neglet Shekhinah LaAaron. And she's going to prove to us that the Shekhinah actually rested on Aharon in Egypt before Moshe Rabbeinu even came on the scene. And he quotes Pazukim Shemuel, Hanigle nigleti el bet abicha v'ne'emra lo nevuah shel meslai meketuvah bi'hezkel ad v'yamru bi. Which means those Pesukim show us how God communicated to Aharon way before Moshe Rabbeinu even came down to Egypt. And still, he did not get jealous when Moshe Rabbeinu was now given the job in order to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. Comes the Gemara and continues. Shalchu le bene Bashkar le Levi. The people of Bashkar, that's a place, they sent a question to Levi. Actually, they sent three questions. Question number one, Kila Mahu. Canopy bed, is it permissible to open the canopy bed on Shabbat? Question number two, Keshuta Bekarma Mahu. Keshuta's hops. Planting hops in a vineyard. What's the deen? We have a law that's called Kedeh HaKerim. You're not allowed to mix breed different vegetables in a vineyard. The question is, how do you consider hops? If you consider it a vegetable, then you can have a problem of kedayim. It's cross-breeding. However, or mixed breeding. However, if you consider it a tree, so there is no isur of planting a tree next to a vineyard. So they wanted to know, how do you consider this item called kishuta, hops? Question number three, met bi yom tov mahu. Somebody, chas shalom, dies on yom tov. What do we do regarding the burial? Which means, are you allowed to dig the grave on Yom Tov or not? Adaziel, in the interim, as they were going to ask these questions, Nach Lafshe de Levi. Levi passed away. Amar Shemuel Rav Menashia. So Shemuel told Rav Menashia, I hakimat, if you consider yourself wise and you know the answers to these questions, Shalach lehu. So you send them the answers to these questions. Shalachlu. So he sent them the following. Kila, regarding your question of the canopy bed, Hazarnu al kol side kila. We reviewed all the different angles and the sides of the halachic question of a canopy bed. Velo matzinu la tzadheter. We haven't found an angle or a side to say it's permissible, meaning it's unequivocally asur. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? V'lishlach lehu kederami bani Haskel. How come he didn't send it back that there is a way to do it? Like we learned on yesterday's daf, Rami bani Haskel's option, if you have strings or ropes that are attached already, so we considered that that's considered as if you started already. And therefore we said, it's considered not making an oil, it's considered mosif al oil. So therefore you should have told him, you have an option. Just put strings on it before Shabbat, then you'll be able to open it and close it. How come he didn't give him that option? So Gemara says, Lefi she'enan b'nei Torah. Because the people of Bashkar were not Torah scholars. And therefore the concern was, if you allow them this, they might come and make an isur. And if you can only give these type of leniencies to responsible people that understand Torah, and therefore you didn't want to take a risk by giving them the leniency, lest they come and abuse it and they'll be more lenient than they're allowed to. Kishuta bekarma, regarding the hops in the vineyard, erbubia. He told them it indeed is considered a mixture, and therefore you can't plant the hops in the vineyard. Oh, the Gemara says, what do you mean? Why don't you send the answer like the bitarfon? What's the bitarfon's rule? The Tanya. Kishut, regarding kishut, that's the hops, the bitarfon omer en kilayim bekerim. He says it's not considered kilayim in the vineyard. Da'kamim omrim kilayim bekerim. And the rabbis say, no, it is indeed kilayim. So we have a machloket, if kishot are considered kilayim or not. Now we have a rule. Kilayim applies from the Torah in Israel. in Chutz La'ares, Kilayim is only the Rabbanan. It's only rabbinical. So there is a rule. Whenever you have a machloket in Israel, you're able to take the lenient opinion in Chutz La'ares. And therefore, since we have a machloket in Israel regarding hops, and the Beit Darfon said what? No problem. Well, in Israel, we're not going to take his opinion. We take the opinion of the rabbis. It is a problem. But in Chutz La'ares, you could take the lenient opinion. So therefore, the Gemara is asking, why did you send back to these people of Bashkar that in Chutz La'ares, you told them that it's considered Kilayim? We have a rule. Anybody that's lenient in Israel, halakha kemoto b'chutz la'aretz. Halakha follows him in chutz la'aretz, meaning you should have taken Rabbi Tafon's opinion for chutz la'aretz. So the Gemara answers the same answer, lefi she'enam b'nei Torah. Again, since they weren't knowledgeable in Torah, the concern, the rabbi didn't want to give them any leniencies, lest they come and take advantage and do more than they're allowed to. Next point, the Gemara says, Machriz Rav Hai. Rav Hai would announce, Man deba'e lemizla keshuta becharma lizla. He would say, anybody that wants to plant hops in a kerem, in a vineyard, let him do it. Now obviously you have to say that either he held, he was in a place, in Chutz La'aretz, where there was B'nai Torah, and therefore he wasn't concerned about anybody coming to make any mistakes. Rav Amram Hasida mangid alave. Rav Amram Hasida would punish, would actually give lashes to somebody that would plant hops. Obviously you have to say he was in a place that there were not B'nai Torah, and therefore he was not lenient. Rav Mesharshia had a different angle here. Yahiv le'piruta le'tinok nochri. He wouldn't let the people plant, but he'd give a coin to a minor Gentile and tell him, go plant the hops next to the vines. So that was his way of doing it. So the Gemara says, already if you're giving it to a tinok, a minor, what's the difference? What do you got to give it to a goy for? Give it to even a minor Jew. Gemara says, atel le'misrach. Now, we're concerned that he might get used to it, and he might end up doing it when he gets older. So then we don't want to start training a tinok katan, Yisrael. Legadol nochri. Alright, so why do you have to give it to a minor goy? You give it to an adult goy. A goy is a goy. What's the difference? The Gemara says, Ate la'achlufe b'Yisrael. Because you might confuse a gadol with a gadol. So therefore, if you let a goy gadol, you might give it to a Jew gadol. Therefore, his leniency was only a katan, goy, give him a coin to go plant. Obviously, he held that you could only do it through a shinui, through something that's clearly evident that you're doing it in a different way. Comes the Gemara and says, third question, met. Somebody dies on Yom Tov. Shalach lehu. So Shmuel sent, or Rav Menashia sent to them, Met lo yitaseku be, lo yehudain, ve lo armain, lo be Yom Tov Rishon, ve lo be Yom Tov Sheni. Nobody could deal with him. Not a Jew, not Goyim, not on the first day of Yom Tov, not on the second day of Yom Tov. Finished. Asur. Ini, the Gemara has a contradiction. Ve'amar biyuda bar shilat amar ve'aseh. Uvda hava bebek enishdad de Me'on. There was a story that took place in the synagogue of Me'on. Bi Yom Tov asamukh le'Shabbat. It was Yom Tov that was close to Shabbat. Now, ve'lo yadar na im lefanav im le'achorav. Now we don't know the details of the story, if Yom Tov was before Shabbat, meaning Yom Tov fell out on a Friday, or it was Acharav, or Yom Tov fell out on a Sunday. And what happened? Somebody died. Okay? So the Gemara says, what did they do? V'atu lekemet Rabbi Yochanan.
So they came in front of Rabbi Yochanan. Ve'amar lehu yitasku be'amimin. He said, let the goy, the goyim can do the burial. Now, this was a specific case because either if you say Yom Tov fell out on Friday, the reason why he was lenient on that Friday is because if you don't bury him today, you're going to have to wait now till after Shabbat. So he made a dispensation on the first day of Yom Tov, bury him. Or if you say what, Yom Tov was on a Sunday, and we're talking about where the guy died on Shabbat, and therefore they allowed to bury on Sunday because already it was the second day after the guy died. So either way, this is a specific case where Yom Tov was next to Shabbat, so they allowed on that Yom Tov to bury al yedeh goy. So comes the Gemara and says, Ve'amar Rava, and Rava taught as well, Met bi Yom Tov Rishon. If a person dies on the first day of Yom Tov, again, Rashi learns that this is similar to the case that we learned above. It's only talking about a Yom Tov that's either before Shabbat or after Shabbat. That's the way that she learns this case. Again, not a regular Yom Tov. Yom Tov that's either before Shabbat or after Shabbat. Yitasku bo amimin. In that case, he says, you can only bury the body through goyim. Be Yom Tov sheni. But on the second day of Yom Tov, yitasku bo Yisrael. Then already Jews are allowed to deal with the burial. Va'afilu bi Yom Tov sheni shel Rosh Hashanah. Even on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, Jews are able to do the burial. And the reason why they single out Rosh Hashanah, because regarding the second day of Rosh Hashanah, we are stringent on one law. Mashe'enkin bebitzah. The law is normally that an egg that's hatched on Yom Tov is mukseh. Okay? That's the first Mishnah, Masechet Betzah. However, it is permissible on the second day of Yom Tov. Okay? Rosh Hashanah is the exception. That a betzah that was born on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is forbidden on the second day as well. The Gemara betzah goes and explains exactly the reasons. But for our point is regarding burial, the second day of Rosh Hashanah is like all other Yamim Tovim, and the Jew is allowed to do the burial himself. So now we go back to our question. Already you see that what? That on the first day you could do it al yedei goyim. On the second day you could do it al yedei Yisrael. So when they sent the question, right? Bnei Bashcha, they sent the question to Rav Menashe. And he came along and said what? Asur, not a Jew and not a goy. What are you talking about? We see already over here, they are dispensations. So the Gemara answers, Lefi she'enam b'nei Torah, because they are not studious of Torah, and therefore he did not want to give them any leniencies lest they come and do a isur. Now according to that she, we have to analyze here, because he's learning the case over here throughout the Gemara is only a Yom Tov that is next to Shabbat. Now, the people of Bnei Bashkar, they didn't specify that their case was next to Shabbat. So maybe that's why he said it's Asur. Because the only dispensation according to Rashi is when it's a Yom Tov on a Friday or a Sunday. But if it's a regular Yom Tov on the first day, everything will be Asur. So therefore, he answered the right question. So the Mefarshim explained, no. Bnei Bashkar did not specify what the case was. So that Menashe should have came along and answered, well, it depends when he died. If he died, if the dead person you're referring to was on a Friday or a Sunday, there is heterim. From the fact that Menashe gave a blanket answer and did not give any differentiations, so then we see what? Must be he holds. It's as soon across the board. What do you mean? We said it's permissible. They're not B'nai Torah. Since they're not B'nai Torah, they didn't want to give them any leniencies because they're going to come now and start doing things that they're not allowed to do, which is you might be allowed to bury, but they might do extra melachot that are not proper in the burial. That's the way that she learns the sugya. But I must point out, it's not the halakha. The Rambam, as well as Shulchan Aruch, they learned when Rava came along and said, Met bi Yom Tov Rishon, Goyim bury. Met bi Yom Tov Sheni, a Jew buries. It's talking about a regular Yom Tov, nothing to do with Friday or Sunday. meaning you don't have to come on to only because it's a Friday and it's going to be 2 days because you can't bury on Shabbat, or Sunday because it's 2 days. Even on a regular Yom Tov that falls out in the middle of the week. Hadakha, first day, Al Yedeh. Goyim, second day, Afilu Al Yedeh, Yisrael. Comes again when I continues. And also, Shana is the same deen. First day, Ayyadeh Goyim. Second day, Ayyadeh Yisrael. Amar Av Abin. Bar Av Una. Amar Av Hamma Bar Guria. Mitatef Adam Bekila Ubekaskaseha. Veyotzeh Lirshut Rabin Beshabbat Ve'enu Hoshesh. We're talking about over here a kila, which literally means, till now we learned as the canopy, but now we're talking about where the cloth is not attached to the bed. Person wants to know, can he wear the canopy? He wants to wear it as a beged. Now, the canopy has, coming down from it, fringes and strings. So the Gemara wants to know, can he wear it on Shabbat in the public domain? He can. The garment is considered wearing it, and the fringes over there that are dangling from it, it's not considered carrying. So therefore it's considered a beged. So the Gemara says, yeah. Gemara has a question. But I asks, Maishina mid Rav Huna? Why is it different than the case of Rav Huna? Tudama Rav Huna amar Rav. Hayotze betalet she'ena mitzuyetzet kilcheta. Beshabbat hayav hatat. The person, let's say, is wearing a talet. Now, if the talet has four strings on it, according to the halakha, for sure it's permissible to wear such a garment on Shabbat in the public domain, because it's considered a legitimate garment. Mm-hmm. However, let's say you have a talit, and it's not strung according to the halakha. Meaning, let's say it only has strings on three corners, and one corner, there's no strings. So the Gemara says, the strings are considered carrying. Not the garment. The garment is a garment. But those strings that are dangling, it's considered you're carrying them. Oh, so what's the difference when you're wearing the kila, when you're wearing that beged that has the fringes that are dangling? You tell me that's okay. What's the difference? Why are the sasit considered a burden carrying and the fringes of the kila not? That's the Gemara's question. Gemara's answer, tzitzit legabe talet hashive. The tzitzit in regard to the garment are considered significant. Velo batle. And therefore they are not batel, they are not nullified to the garment. Hane lo hashive. The fringes of the kila, they're not considered significant. Ubatle. Now what is the explanation over here? That she says that we're talking about a talet that they used to make in the olden days with the blue string, with the tchelet. Now, the tchelet is considered hashuf. And therefore, these items over here are going to be considered not batel to the garment. These items are going to be considered on their own. Now, since they're not valuable on their own in the sense, because it's not kasher for the mitzvah, so therefore you're carrying a significant item on Shabbat. Therefore the talet that has, let's say, three strings with the tchelet, those strings are important, so it's not batel to the beged, it's carrying. The fringes that are on the kila, it's all considered part of the beged, they're insignificant. Therefore it's part of the beged itself, if it's not carrying. That's the way that she learns. Other rishonim learn simply, since bottom line, these strings over here are significant to you, because you're going to want to go back and finish the talet. You want to put the fourth string on. So these strings obviously have an importance. So therefore they stand on their own. There's only three, but therefore it's considered carrying. You're not carrying the garment you're wearing. But the strings that are hanging have a significance to them. Therefore it's considered carrying on Shabbat. Point halakha, that one has to be careful to make sure that his talet or his talet katan is kosher before he goes out on Shabbat. Otherwise the strings that he's wearing will indeed be considered a masui. Comes the Gemara and continues. And I continues.
Some change this over here to Rava Bar Rav Abin, or just Rav Abin. Ma'arim, Amar Rav Abin, Ma'arim Adam Al Hamshameret B'Yom Tov Litlot Bar Rimonim V'Toleba Shemarim. Go back to Al Mishnah. We learned that according to Hachamim, it is forbidden to place the strainer over the barrel on Yom Tov. The Gemara concluded in yesterday's daf, according to Rashi at least, that the reason is it's Yisur Midrabbanan Ovdin Dehol. It is a weekday action because it looks like you're preparing in order to do straining, or it's a preparation that looks like an ohel. Therefore, it's Asur. So now the Gemara is going to give you a way, using a harama, using a trick, in order to get the strainer on the barrel legally, and then once it's on the barrel, even the rabbis agreed, you can strain with it. Right? On Yom Tov, it's permissible because it's Ochel Nefesh. But the question is, how are you going to get the strainer on the barrel? So the Gemara says, do it for the intention in order to store fruit on it. Rimonim. Which means you want to use like a basket. I want to stick it on top of the barrel. What? And my intention I'm doing it is for putting fruit, let's say, on top of it. So therefore, you can't tell me it's Ovdin Dehol. Ovdin Dehol is only when you're doing it in order to strain. Here I'm doing it to put the fruit on it. And then once you put it on, then already you can change your intention. And now you're able to use it as a strainer. So comes the Gemara and says, wait, Amar Rav Asher, Vehu Detala Barimunim. But you have to do it. Meaning it's not enough just to, you know, have intent and then right away go and strain. You have to physically take pomegranates, put it on the strainer, take them off, and then you can use it as... So even though we're letting Halarama, but it's got to be evident that you did it for the Munim and you actually have to do it. So the Gemara has a question. Why is it different than that which we learned in a Braita? The Gemara is going to discuss now making beer, brewing beer on Chol HaMoed. Okay, now, if you don't have beer, then there's no question it's permissible. The problem is if you have, so the Hakami did not want you to toil in doing something that is not necessary. They don't want you to work on the holiday if you have beer already. So Gemara is going to discuss a case where you have beer already, but still using a harama, there's a way to make beer anyway. So Gemara says, "Matinim shechar b'moed etzorech ha-moed." If you need it for the holiday, of course you could brew the beer on the holiday. Shelo etzorech ha-moed asur. But if you don't need it for the holiday, certainly the rabbis don't want you to exert yourself for no reason, and it's asur. Echad shechar temarim ve'echad shechar se'orim. Whether it's beer from the dates or it's beer from the barley. Now, whatever type of beer it is. But even if you have, let's say, in the storage, old beer, you're allowed to brew a new batch and you're able to drink from the new batch and therefore you have no problem, which means you're making harama. Which means you have beer already. It doesn't matter. Make new beer, drink from it, and therefore you have a way to make your beer on the holiday, even though you had already. Now the Gemara over here is asking a question. What's the question? When it came to the other case over there, they made you place the strainer on top of the barrel, right? And they didn't let you do anything. They told you before you strain, before you do anything, you have to actually put the rimonim on top of the strainer in order that it's evident that you're not doing it, specifically for any other reason. However, over here, already the guy brewed the beer already, which means the issue over here is the brewing. Already the guy, you let the guy brew the beer. At the time of the brewing of the beer, there was nothing evident that he was doing it beheter. And therefore, only after he brewed it, they tell him what? Okay, drink from it. According to what we said earlier, on the contrary, before you should be able to use it, you need to show your intent.
Here they're allowing you to brew it first, and then after they tell you, take a drink from it. What do you mean? But at the time you did it, it's harama without any indication. I repeat again, in the case of the strainer, what's the issue over there? They don't want you to do something that looks like Ovdim Dehol. What's the Ovdim Dehol? It looks like you're straining. Right? You're making something to strain. That we don't want, that what you do during the week. We don't want you to do that during Yom Tov. So what do you have to do before you even strain? Put some fruit on top of it so everybody says, oh, he did it for this reason. Here, they're letting you, what's the issue over here on Yom Tov? You can't brew beer if you have it ready. But here they're telling you, brew the beer. Now already I did the exertion. After you brewed it already, they tell you, okay, take a sip, drink from the new beer. Why don't you need something evident a step before, at the time of the brewing? So the Gemara says, nah, hatam lo muhamilta, hacha muhamilta. Simple difference. By the case of the guy brewing the beer on Yom Tov or Chol HaMoed, it's not evident that he's making any suit. Because why should I have to assume that he has old beer? And therefore a regular guy that's looking will say, well, he probably needs beer on Yom Tov. So therefore, I don't have to go do something immediately to show, because the automatic first assumption of people is going to be, he needs the beer. Masha'en Kein, when you see somebody putting a strainer over a barrel, the first thing that comes to your mind is, they're straining. You don't normally put pomegranates like that. So therefore, in order to make it clear that your intention was not specifically for the strain, which would be Asumid Rabbanan, therefore you have to do a ma'aseh immediately, then you're able to use it exactly. Comes from says, Amr Rabbanan Rav Asher. The rabbis told Rav Asher, Hazeh Mor, look my master, Hait Surman Rabbanan, look at this young scholar, the Rav Huna Rabbi Hiyun Sheme, his name is Rav Huna, the son of Rav Hiyun, the Amila Rav Huna bere Halvan Sheme, the Shakal Barad Tuma, on Shabbat he took the head of the garlic, the clove of the garlic, Umanach be Barzad de Dana, and he placed it in the hole of the barrel. It seems by the spigot of the barrel there was a hole; it was leaking. So he went and he took a clove of a garlic and he plugged it up in that spot. Now even though it's clearly not a Yisud Deoraita over here, because you're not putting a piece of wood or a piece of metal, but it could be Yisud Rabbanan because you are fixing the barrel. And he did it. So what was his justification? Ve'amar le'atznu'eka mechavina. He says, no, I just need somewhere to store it. Which means he used a subterfuge over here. As if he said, you know, where am I going to put this piece of garlic over here? Oh, you know what? Let me put it over here. So therefore, he didn't do it, he covered up his intent. He gave a different reason. I'm putting it there to store. So they told us, look at this rabbi over here. He puts the clove of garlic in the spigot over here to close up the barrel over here. And secondly, he did another item. The Azal, he went, the Naim, and he slept, Bimbara, in a boat. Which means the boat was in the dock. Now we know you're not allowed to get on a boat within 3 days of Shabbat. That's the halakha we learned earlier in the Masechet. He went on the boat, and on Shabbat, or for that matter before Shabbat, within 3 days, and he went and he slept on the boat, knowing that the captain of the boat is gonna sail on Shabbat. And now what ended up happening? They sailed them to the other side of the island. Ve'avad lehak gisa. He went to the other side. Ve'sayar peri. And now he was able to monitor his fruit. He had field on the other side, so he wanted to see what's going on. But how's he gonna get there on Shabbat? So he went, he slept on the boat, the captain traveled, he got to the other side. Ve'amar, and what did he say? Ana leminam kamichavina.
All I was doing is I wanted to go to sleep. So I found a spot in the boat. So again, he gave a subterfuge over here. He covered up his intention. I'm going to sleep. So they want to understand, what kind of business is this over here? Amar lehu ha'aramaka amart? Well, you're telling on him? What did he do? He did over here a harama, which means a legal loophole, a legal trick. Harama bidrabanani. And the cases that he used these subterfuges was only on rabbinical items. Meaning, putting the garlic in the spigot is only sud rabbanan. Right? It's not a permanent fix. For that matter, going on a boat within 3 days of Shabbat is only Isur Rabbanan. So he told him back, he says, V'tsurbam Rabbanan, a rabbi, lo atele mi'aybad lechetechila. Maybe for a regular person, we're not going to allow him to do these tricks, because if you allow him to start playing these games, he might come end up doing it without the tricks. He's going to make the Isur. But a Tamir Hakam, on a rabbinical Isur, with a subterfuge, permissible. Therefore, he was in the right. Therefore, he has no problem regarding the garlic and regarding the sleeping on the boat. Comes the Mishnah and says, "Notnim mayim al gabe hashemarim bishvil sheyitzolu." First din, it is permissible to put water on top of the shemarim, would be the sediments, in order that they should become clear. Now what are we talking about over here? So that she says, we're talking about where everything was set up before Shabbat. Because we know you're not allowed to strain wine on Shabbat. So you're talking about over here where the wine was strained already. You just have on top of the barrel now the sediments. Now, there is some wine that is in the sediments. You want to get that wine out. So the Mishnah says you could take clear water, meaning drinkable water, so there's no problem of sifting the water, because the water is drinkable anyway, and you could pour it over the sediments. Now what's going to happen while you do that? It's going to drain out the balance of wine that's in the sediment. And therefore, now on the bottom you'll end up having a mixture of wine and water. Okay, it's drinkable. So therefore the Mishnah is telling you there is no problem over there of borer, or any problem of straining. That is already permissible, to pour clear water on the sediments that have some wine that is in it. Okay, that's the first din. Umesanenin etayayin besudarin ubechefifa mesarit. And it is permissible to strain wine on Shabbat besudarin, with cloths, and a kefifa mesarit would be a type of basket that's made out of, let's say, the palm branches. Now, what are we talking about over here? Didn't we learn in our last Mishnah that you're not allowed to strain wine on Shabbat? Well, first of all, we said you're not allowed to use a mishamiret. That's the official strainer. Here, if you see, the Mishnah is talking about different items here. Sudar, so that's a cloth. That's not the designated item that's normally used to strain. It's straining bishinui. But so what? If you can't strain, it should be asud, whether you're doing the official way or you're doing it even with a non-conventional strainer. So the Rishonim over here learned the Mishnah as follows. We're not talking about wine that's obviously pure and drinkable for everybody. Because if you're talking about drinkable wine, you could even strain it in the Mishamiret, because it's drinkable, you're not doing anything. So you just want to run it through the Mishamiret, big deal. Now, we're obviously not talking about either undrinkable wine, because then already, what do I care, even if you're doing it Bishinui, still you are straining it. So we're talking about wine in this Mishnah, a middle zone, where it's not 100% pure, it's not clean, but it's drinkable by the majority of people. So the Hiddush is wine that still might have some impurities in it, but still drinkable by majority of people. If you do it bishinui, it's permissible. Meaning this wine would not be permissible to pour it in a mishamiret. That's the normal conventional way. But if you use a sudar, a cloth, or this basket that has the weaving of the palm, that would be permissible. It's a very important interpretation to the Mishnah. Again,
It's talking about drinkable wine, the majority of people, purifying it, al yedeh shinui. Next case. Venotnin besa b'misanenet shel chardal. This is a case that we learned earlier. We learned earlier in the perek, in the last perek, about mustard. Now, although it's forbidden to select mustard on Shabbat, he considered borer, or light borer, what they used to do is, they used to color the mustard seed yellow. How? They used to take an egg. The egg has the white and the yellow part. Right? The white part is called the helbon, and the yellow part is called helmon. And they would drop it in a strainer. What would happen is the white part of the egg, it's sticky. So it stays on top, and the yellow part would drip through the bottom of the strainer, and it would go onto the mustard, and it would cause it to become colored. So the Mishnah is telling you that that process is not considered borer. Okay? Even though technically you're separating the yellow from the white. Now she earlier told us the reason, because why? Because eventually everything is going to sift through. Which is eventually, the yellow will go through first, but then the white is going to after. So therefore it's just, you know, it's one after the other. Another explanation we said is, and Rashi will tell to us on the Amud Rishon, Rashi will tell to us on Amud Rishon, that since over here your intention is to use it as a coloring, so therefore it's not considered as if you're selecting a good part of the food from the bad part. It's not considered food. This is considered a coloring. And for some factor, that's not considered borer when your intention is to use the yellow part for a dye. That's the way that she learns the sugyat. She then brings some of his rabbis in the Mishnah that we're talking about putting the egg through a strainer, not only in mustard, but putting it for that matter in any tafsil. So what does it tell me about mustard then? It says in the Mishnah, Umisanin et ha-betza v'notim et ha-bemisanin et shel-chardal. The Hiddush is, because since that's not the conventional way to strain an egg in a mustard strainer. So therefore you can use a mustard strainer in order to drop the egg in it so it can drip into a tafshil. A different type of food. So it's about, look, either you're coloring mustard, or you're just dropping an egg through a mustard strainer in a tefshil, even though the yellow part's going to go in. Since you're not using the conventional way, because you're using a different type of keli, so bishinui, and since, as we learned earlier, eventually the whole thing is going to fall in anyway, so therefore it would be mutar. Next case. Ve'osin anumalin b'shabbat. It is permissible to make a certain drink called anumalin b'shabbat. Okay, obviously this drink, the Gemara will explain to us what it is. It seemed it took a lot of exertion to make this drink. So the douche is, it is still permissible to make it on Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda omer b'Shabbat mikos. You can only make a cupful on Shabbat.
No, not extra.
Not extra. B'Yom Tov b'Lagin. On Yom Tov you're able to use a bigger keli that can even hold a log, which is a little bigger. U'b'mu'ed b'Havit. And in Chol HaMoed you can even make a barrel of this stuff. Again, this drink, it was very difficult to make, it seems. And therefore, they don't want you to exert yourself extra. So Shabbat, minimum amount. Yom Tov, a little more. Chol HaMoed you can even make a barrel. Rabbi Tzadok omer, hakol lefi ha'orchin. So according to most opinions, Rabbi Tzadok is coming to be lenient. He says, now, it all goes according to the need, which means if you have more guests and therefore you need to make more, it would be permissible even on Shabbat. You have to limit yourself to a cupful of it. You can make even more. Amar Ze'idi. Ze'idi taught. Noten Adam Yayin Salul. A person is able to take clear wine. Umayim Silulin, or clear water, letocham shamedet b'Shabbat, even in the sifter on Shabbat, that's the normal way that b'Shamedet, then hoshesh, no problem. Because again, you're not sifting anything. It's clear water. It's drinkable, according to everybody. There is no selecting. Aval achurin lo. But cloudy wine or water, it's forbidden to put it in the conventional b'Shamedet.
Why? Because that would be Borer. Metibe, we have a question. Rabban Shimon Gamliel Omer, Tored Adam Habid Shel Yayin, a person is allowed to mix the barrel of wine. Yena Ushmareha. Right? You have the barrel of wine with its sediment. So you're allowed to mix it, let's say, on Shabbat, venoten letok hamshameret b'Shabbat, and you can pour it in the mishameret into that strainer on Shabbat, ve'en hoshesh, you don't have to worry about it. Now we're talking about wine that obviously is not clear wine. It has sediments. And still we're allowing you to pour it in the strainer. What are you talking? We just learned that you can only pour in clear wine. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, Targemaz Yahiri ben agitot shanu, in between the presses, which means it seems there was a certain time of year in between the pressing season that all the wines were cloudy. None of the wines were pure. And at that time of the year, people would drink the wine even with the sediments. So therefore, you're right. At the time of the year where people don't drink such wine, then straining it is going to be considered borer. But at the time of the year where that wine is drinking by the majority of people, so therefore, there is no problem in order to strain it because it is drinkable. So we're talking about different times of the year. Comes the Gemara and says, it is permissible to strain the wine in cloths. A different issue over here. When you're straining it on Shabbat, they don't want you to make a hole. What does that mean? For example, after you place, let's say, the strainer over the barrel, now we'll discuss in which case are you allowed to put a strainer over a barrel, but after you place the sudar, let's say, over the barrel, they don't want you to make an indentation in the center of the barrel. So now it's a guma, which means it's like a... now all the wine is going to fall to the center because it's depressed in the middle. That they don't want you to do. What's the problem of making a guma in the center of the strainer? So that she tells us, ki uvdat dehol, that's the way they would do it during the week. Iname atelide sehita. Or they're concerned that when you do it that way, somehow you might come and squeeze it. I guess if it's taut, you're not going to come to squeeze it. Somehow, if it's indented, maybe when you're taking it out or you're pouring it in, somehow you'll come and squeeze it, and sehita is asur. So that she gives us two reasons why you can't make a guma. Either ovdin dehol, it's the way you did it during the week, or it's because atelide sehita. Next point. Ubechififa mesarit. For that matter, you're allowed to take a basket that's made out of palm, put it over the barrel, and pour the wine over the barrel. Again, we're talking about wine, gentlemen, that is basically drinkable by people. That's why you're allowed to do it in this way. Amar Rav Chaya ben Hashem Amar Rav Ubelvad, shelo yagbiya mekarki'ito shel keli tefah. Oh. When you're going to put this basket on top of the barrel, you're making an ohel. What about that issue? So the Gemara says it's only permissible if from the top of the basket to the bottom of the barrel there's less than a tefach space. So you're talking about over here a very small keli. It's almost like a flat keli. Because if the keli has any depth, even a tefach depth, so now when you put the basket on top, you now made an ohel. Because it's roofing over a hollow space of a tefah. So again, you have a keli. I want to strain my wine. That's basically drinkable. So the Gemara Mishnah said, do I take a basket of reeds, put it on top of the keli, now pour the wine over the basket. It'll strain it somehow. But the Gemara says, so long as from the top of the basket to the bottom of the keli, there's no tefah. Because if there's a tefah, so then already it's as if you made an oil, and therefore it is asur. comes the Gemara and says, again, it's a very flat, small amount, obviously. Amar Rav. Rav said, Hai firunka. What is a firunka? She says it is a beged, a rag, that they spread over a barrel of wine in order to cover it. It's called the firunka. Apalga de chuba shari. It is permissible to spread it over half the barrel. Akule kuba asur. But over the whole barrel, it's asur. Okay, another law. Obviously, if you're going to spread it over the whole barrel, now you made an ohel. That is going to be forbidden. Right? Because you spread a whole sheet over a barrel on Shabbat, that's making an ohel. Or in the whole, the way that she learns. However, obviously, we're talking where it's more than a tefach. A Shabbat, even. Now the point is, if you do it by taking this beged and you place it not across the whole barrel, you place it only over half, so which means you're leaving half of the barrel exposed, that's not going to be considered isur at all. I guess, according to Rashid, there's no avdin dehol, because that's not the way you do it during the week, and therefore you have no problem. Now she says clearly, delav o halahav, it's not even considered an oil. Oil has to be spread over the entire area. Here you're leaving half of it exposed, and therefore it is not a problem. Next din. Amar Rav Papa, lo nehadek inish, a person should not affix tsinyata. Tsinyata would be, let's say, pieces of wood or hay or straw, right? Bepume de kuzne de habita, on top of the little cup that's attached to the barrel. Mishum de mehazekim shamerit. Because it looks like a meshamerit. Looks like a strainer. What are we talking? They used to have a little cup attached to the barrel. They used to pour from the barrel of wine into this little cup. And they would drink from that cup. So what does the guy want to do? He wants to make a homemade strainer. So what does he do? He takes on the little cup, and he puts on top of it straw and different pieces of wood, wood chips. Now when he's going to pour from the barrel, the wine is going to get sifted through that, you know, homemade strainer, and it's going to clear the wine for him. So the Gemara says, that's asur. Because that's like a meshameret, that's like a strainer. Therefore, that's going to be asur. Okay? Last point. Debe Rav Papa. The house of Rav Papa. Sha'afu, they poured shikra mimana limana. From one cup to another. Very interesting. The beer used to have, let's say, sediment. Okay? What do they call them? Dregs. So they wanted to separate the dregs from the beer. So what did they do? They would take the beer and an empty cup, and they would keep on pouring slowly in order that what? The beer will come out, let's say, and the dregs would stay behind. And the Gemara is telling you that's not a problem of borin. You're just pouring. Again, you're doing it in a way where the dregs stay behind. So the Gemara says, "Amar le Rav Hamid Iftin Ravina Ha'ika Nitzotzot." What about the drops? Meaning, we're not worried about the initial beer that comes out because the dregs are really on the bottom. So I'm not selecting anything. But once you get to the bottom of the cup, now already when you're pouring, you're actually separating the beer that's in the dregs. So at that point, the last drop, you're selecting. Meaning you're separating, you know, good from bad or bad from good. So how do they worry? How do they get to the end? So the Gemara says, Nitzotzot lebera papa lo hashive. Which means these little drops for the family of Rav Papa were not significant. Rashi says, why? Because they were brewers of beer. So Rav Papa's household had a lot of beer. So they weren't concerned about the little drops that were at the end. So therefore, they didn't hold the cup there and wait until the last drop came out. But they have a lot of beer. Therefore, it would be permissible. The bottom, Rashi says, Nitzotzot ben Rav Papa lo hashive, shehinvani. It was a merchant, umatil shechar, he used to brew beer. It says about Metzia and Pesach Vilkach Eno Magpil Nitzotzot Kol Kach Ukshemagia Nitzotzot. When he gets to the Nitzotzot Mashlich, he throws them out, and therefore there is no problem. In the beginning, they weren't mixed. Therefore, he was able to pour the beer in to keep the dregs on the bottom.